Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity winding his way back from his Easter week vacation. He should be back here on Tuesday, but in his stead, we're thrilled to have, once again, Betsy Woodruff from the Washington Bureau of National Review. Betsy, welcome back.
Thanks a bunch.
The good news is that according to a new Rasmussen poll, 45% of Americans think the sequester cuts were actually too small, which means Americans, by and large, aren't buying what the president is selling on how this is just this draconian cut to everything that really matters, from White House tours to air traffic control. And, of course, Jim Garrity and others have been documenting what they do still have the money to spend on, like gardening at the NATO ambassador's mansion. And you and I talked about the mud snail sex study that is still going on full throttle. And there's only 22% in this survey, Betsy, who think that the cuts were too small. Now, simple math will tell you there's about a third of the country who's kind of on the fence about this. But still, 2-1 on those who actually have an opinion, pretty good, especially in the face of what was a pretty vigorous White House press effort here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that Americans really haven't lost their appetite for spending cuts. And I think a good example of this is the South Carolina 1 race. You know, the runoff's going to be tomorrow between Mark Sanford and Curtis Bostick. And it's basically, from what I can tell, been a contest of who hates spending the most.
Right.
Bostick's campaign website is stopspending.com. So worst case scenario, hopefully he'll be able to make a little cash when he can sell that domain name.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the polls do not look good for him. But yeah, Mark Sanford's doing the exact same message, and obviously he has higher name recognition, slight bit of baggage, perhaps. We'll see how much that matters.
Details.
On Tuesday, but the fact that, you know, that's a pretty conservative district, and so you'd kind of expect that to be the hallmark of certainly the Republican campaign. But the fact that this is still a winning issue for conservatives has got to be pretty exciting given all the frustrations we suffered last November, I would think.
Right, absolutely. And as you mentioned, especially given the president's PR efforts to paint the sequester as, you know, this gloom and doom, end times, doomsday scenario. Honestly, I'm surprised that so many Americans think the cuts should be deeper.
And, of course, we got the Easter egg roll today. So, you know, the benevolent one cut the kids a little slack on the South Lawn today to actually keep going with the Easter egg roll, which was threatened. Loosely threatened to be a victim of sequester like the White House tours. But ultimately, I think they realized if the White House tour PR was that bad, canceling the Easter egg roll was really going to look bad.
Do it for the children.
Yes,
for the children's sake.
On to martini number two now, and the bad martini. And Betsy, this kind of played out over the weekend. There were reports on Saturday suggesting that this Gang of Eight was really, really close to a deal on comprehensive immigration reform, including a pathway to citizenship. Early Sunday morning, before Chuck Schumer and Jeff Flake hit the airwaves, Marco Rubio sends out a press release saying, well, that's a little bit premature to say that we're right on the verge of dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's here. But the problem here with the bad martini is that even though Jeff Flake and to some extent John McCain and Lindsey Graham, but I really don't think they're even all that insistent on this, the talk is of, well, we're going to do border security first, and then that's the trigger for this pathway to citizenship. But the more you listen to the Democrats in this and the more moderates in this, it looks like that's probably going to be on the cutting room floor, like it has been in every proposed immigration deal.
Yeah, it's always the trickiest part, you know, because it's pretty easy to set up a guest worker program, comparatively speaking. You know, comparatively speaking, E-Verify isn't crazy complicated, but actually securing the border, it was very labor intensive. It's very costly. And when that's at the linchpin of making a deal, and it should be for conservatives, that just means that it's going to be a much slower process. So for people coming from the left who really want to push through this immigration reform so the president can have it as part of his legacy and so he can move on to other items on his agenda, getting border security to the bottom of the priority list is very strategically important. And I imagine that's part of the reason that Rubio's been so cautious and so not cagey, but you know what I mean. He's been very hesitant to say anything's going to happen soon. And I think that's because the only way that an immigration bill can get passed quickly is if they push border security out of the way. So it'll be interesting to see. It's interesting to see Rubio kind of handle the politics of this because he's got a lot riding on it.
Real quick, do you think even if this happens, which I guess right now, given the momentum on Capitol Hill, it's probably likely to get pretty close, that this will actually help the GOP with Hispanics, or are they just going to be seen as opportunists on this?
I don't see it helping the GOP as a party. I think if it happens, it could help Rubio, maybe. But I think one of the biggest errors that Republicans fall into is assuming that Hispanics are single issue voters on immigration reform. And poll after poll shows that's not the case. They tend to be more fiscally liberal, even though they're socially conservative. So as long as Democrats are the party of entitlement and Republicans don't really emphasize, you know, the way that free markets and reduced government regulation can help lift people from poor worker status to the middle class, I think, you know, one immigration reform measure is probably not going to be the magical fix all for Republicans and Hispanic voters. I think that's very optimistic, and it's kind of rosy eyed to assume that's the case.
On to martini number three now. It's the crazy one, and I promise you this is not an April Fool's joke. I wish it was. This is the latest development in the abortion debate. And Betsy, let's hope this is an isolated incident, but given the knee-jerk response here from the Planned Parenthood official in this story, I have to believe that it's not. This is a woman named Elisa Lapolt Snow. She is a lobbyist on behalf of Planned Parenthood. She was testifying before lawmakers in Florida, and the snippet of the conversation we're going to play here is her under questioning from State Representative Jose Oliva. Earlier in the testimony, Lapolt Snow had said that if a baby survives a botched abortion, is alive on the table, that the fate of that child should still be up to the mother and the attending physician. And here's the follow-up from Representative Oliva with the Planned Parenthood lobbyist.
Along the same lines, you stated that that a baby born on a table as a result of a botched abortion, that decision should be left to the doctor and the family. Is that what you're saying?
It should. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That decision should be between the patient and the healthcare provider.
Hello, go ahead, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that at that point, the patient would be the child struggling on a table. Wouldn't you agree?
That's a very good question. I really don't know how to answer that.
So, Betsy, you've got, you know, Republican candidates last year, and in some cases, deservedly so, taking heat over what happens if a woman is impregnated due to rape. But now you've got folks on the Democratic side, at least in one of their major social allies in Planned Parenthood, basically arguing that even when born alive, the child of a woman intending to have an abortion doesn't have the right to life. That's pretty darn extreme.
It seems like the major coup of 2012 for Democrats was painting the GOP as the most extreme, crazy party when it came to social issues. But when you have a woman who can't answer what to do with a child that's given birth healthy and intact, like outside the womb, when you have someone at least potentially defending still having a post-birth abortion, it's hard to get more extreme than that. You know, it's hard to figure out how you can possibly paint this as mainstream or compatible with women's rights.
And it would have been interesting in the 2012 campaign. Don't know that would have made a difference, but there's plenty of evidence that shows that as a state senator, President Obama supported that same position that this woman from Planned Parenthood is advocating. And even with all the firebombs being thrown at Republican candidates, that never really came up. And it'd be interesting to see whether that would have made any difference. But it also goes to show that there are those in the party in elected office who hold that position as well. Just frightening. On that obviously, somber note, we'll leave it there. Betsy, as always, great to have you pinch hitting for Jim. We appreciate it very much, and we look forward to talking to you down the road.
For sure. It's always fun.
That is Betsy Woodruff of the Washington Bureau of National Review. Jim Garrity of National Review will be back in his usual chair tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.